All right, and we're live. Welcome back to the Loopcast. Happy Monday, guys. Today I'm joined by Josh and Logan, and we actually had someone so upset, distraught really, that Josh wasn't on the program for the last two episodes. She emailed in and said, Josh is a major part of the program. When are you going to have him in? And I emailed back, Josh, please stop emailing me from burner accounts. This is getting a little bit embarrassing. So, but Josh is back. Josh, what were you up to on your time off?
Well, I might have visited the University of Mary campus in Bismarck. nice campus, and just wanted to let people know some good things are happening up in North Dakota there. So,
For the audio listeners, Josh is adorned in various U Mary merch items.
Yeah, I went up there. I went to the University of Mary. I got the chance to meet Monsignor Shea again, and my daughter went touring a lot, you know, registering for classes. So she's going to really thinking about becoming a marauder. Thus the
do sweet merch,
the pirate here on my shirt here. So, and then I also had the chance to go to the northern suburbs of Milwaukee, and they had a clergy appreciation dinner that a group of knights put on. And they said, hey, would you be willing to come here and speak and maybe talk about a priest that had made a difference in your life? And it was kind of a neat moment because I said, yeah, in fact, one of the two men responsible for my return to the Catholic faith was none other than a person from this town. Literally, his mom and dad were in the audience. And I'm like, thank you for your son. Thank you for convincing him. And for helping me come back to the Catholic faith back in 1986. And he went from being a Hillsdale student to becoming transferring to seminary. And so I'm thankful to now Father Shane Johnson, and grateful to his parents. It's nice to meet his parents again. And I don't know, what better way to show appreciation for clergy than to have a cool conversion story? And so people liked it.
We got to get into that a little bit. I don't know if you've fully, you may have shared bits and pieces, but so you had a time where you were away from the church. What exactly was the encounter that was like, all right, you started maybe coming back in? What was that story?
I mean, we could go a whole hour on this, of course, but I entered Hillsdale College as a freshman in 1995 as an atheist. And I never really encountered anyone who knew their faith really well. And this Shane Johnson was somebody who knew it. And he was holding court against 7-8 Protestants and just going back and forth and answering all these questions. Like, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not even Christian, but if I were, you know, I'd probably be Catholic. And then I ran into, you know, there was a journey over the course of about 18 months. And when I finally came back into the church, Shane had already transferred and gone into seminary to study for the priesthood. My journey had continued, and it made for a long confession. The priest was pretty funny, though. He said, understanding, the most powerful part of the conversion is understanding two things. One, there is a God. And two, you're not it. That was a humbling affair, but it was good. It was good. So, and I actually, it's kind of funny when it comes to confessions at Hillsdale. I've been there before. I pop in. There's so many good Catholics, you know, they say at Hillsdale, but I don't know if they're really good. I mean, man, the confession line there is super long. Tons of sinners.
Yeah. Well, that's the dirty secret about Catholicism, right? It's that we're all sinners. Well, very cool. Josh, happy to have you back. Logan, happy to have you on today. So we got a full slate of stuff to talk about here first. And I don't think this especially excites any of us, but we're talking about over Saturday, the House got together to vote on a foreign aid bill. So just quick tips on the bill itself. It's $95 billion. It's passed on Saturday by the House. $61 billion for Ukraine, $26 for Israel and Palestine, Gaza specifically. And then $8 billion to Indo-Pacific allies, most notably Taiwan. So if you go, and it's being shared now on the YouTube, and shout out to everyone live in the chat here. Love you guys. If you guys want to join us, we're live every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 11 Eastern. But you can see with the yay and nay votes here, we had Republicans pretty deeply divided on this. 101 yays, 110 nays. So more actually voted against it, but all the Democrats voted for it. Notably, no border security funding passed through this, which I think some people were hoping for. But what you'll notice, if we can even expand on this, we have Ukraine flags, many Ukraine flags flying in the House by different members, Republicans, Democrats, everyone. Just a really, I think it's a startling image for a lot of people. Josh, I'm sure you, this doesn't bother you at all, right? Seeing other countries' flags flown in the House.
I was so angry about this. I mean, the thing is, I you know, there's a sect in this country that's so anti-Trump, and they just associate everything Trump with Russia, and Russia invaded Ukraine. Therefore, I want to be pro Ukraine. It's like, I mean, I feel for the people of Ukraine. I have nothing against them. I think their government's a little bit corrupt, obviously. But, you know, I think Putin is a super bad guy. Like, I don't support Putin just because all the politics of this is just kind of crazy in my mind. But, like, you know, why should Americans be spending billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars on Ukraine? You know, I just don't understand the rationale for it. Like, you know, it's like, why would we want to engage in a risky proxy war against Russia? Why would we want to upset them? And, like, again, you know, we took out the Nord Stream pipeline. You know, that kind of torqued, I'm sure, Putin off, too. So it's like, I just don't understand, like, the rationale here. But, yeah, like, you know, it would be one thing if there was, like, a terrorist attack, let's say, in a very close ally of ours, like France or Paris, and people wore the lapel. I remember when there was the attack in England, they wore the Union Jack and, you know, the Old Glory next to each other. That's fine. I mean, you know, we're strong supporters of England. We would do that for Canada, France, one of these countries we've had, you know, centuries of friendship with, you know what I mean? But like waving the Ukraine flag, it just on the U.S. floor after we give them billions of dollars, it just seemed very unseemly. It's like, Do you even wave these Democrats? Do you even wave the American flag this proudly? I mean, I just don't think they do. No, these are people who would get upset when, you know, they actually take a knee. Like, oh, we're not going to stand for the flag. You know, like, right. But apparently they revere the Ukraine flag.
Yeah, the flag that's funding all the other flags. The gay flag, the trans flag, Ukraine, Palestine. The flag that's funding all of them is racist, homophobic.
These liberal protesters would have no problem if there was a protest here in the United States where someone set the American flag on fire. They say, oh, that's part of our freedoms.
Well, they have.
Imagine if the rainbow flag went up in flames.
Recently in front of Brooklyn.
Or the Ukraine flag went up in flames.
Oh, well, recently in front of Brooklyn, they lit an American flag on fire as a pro-Palestinian protest. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's deeply unpopular. Logan, you're on the ground with the political team. How important is Ukraine funding to the average American in Ohio?
As far as voters, I don't think anyone cares. I think they're kind of tired of hearing about Ukraine. I think most Ohioans had never thought about Ukraine before. I'm going to be honest.
How many could point it out on a map, genuinely? I don't know how many representatives can point it out on a map.
No, I think we should play that game. I think we should take a poll of our supporters and see who can point at it on a map. I mean, but let's be honest, how many people can point to anything on a map anymore? I don't really feel like that's fair.
Geography.
If they're upset that we're spending money there, like if anything.
Yeah, 100%. Well, at the end of the day, I think people are starting to pay a little bit more attention to where these budgets are actually being spent. And it's a little concerning given that we have homelessness rampant on the streets of California and New York, immigrants moving into people's homes, kids getting put remote so that the immigrants can live in their schools. And we're sending billions of dollars to other countries while we're just sitting here existing in America. I think it's kind of crazy. And I think American taxpayers just want their money spent in America, which is a novel idea.
Yeah, imagine that. Call me America first, but that's kind of a crazy concept. But speaking of places that receive a lot of American taxpayer dollars, we have some college protests going on in what's considered the best and brightest of American students in the Ivy League. So we had three examples of this over the weekend. We had one going on in Columbia. We had one going on in Yale. We had one going on in Harvard. And the thread between all three of them seems like they're not huge fans of America, which is interesting considering all of this. But yeah, there was even an example in Columbia where there was a rabbi that said Jews need to leave campus because he does not believe that they're safe The direct quote is, "The events of the last few days, especially last night, have made it clear that Columbia University's public safety and the NYPD cannot guarantee Jewish students' safety in the face of extreme anti-Semitism and anarchy. It deeply pains me to say, but I would strongly recommend for you to return home as soon as possible and remain home until the reality in and around campus has dramatically improved."
Mm. Well, you saw in Columbia, they created a human chain to keep Jews out of a portion of campus. So if you were a Jewish student, they were blocking you from entering parts of campus at Columbia University. I mean, it's disgusting.
Well, the guy leading the chain was like a black gay dude. So there is a really bizarre propaganda element to it where I'm seeing kids that, let's just say, don't look Palestinian at all, kind of joining forces because they're looking for righteous quests or something like that. I don't understand.
It's not that. It's that they find common cause with the Palestinians. The Palestinians hate Israel because Israel is pro. I don't love everything Israel does. Don't get me wrong here. Okay. They make mistakes. Okay. Just like every country does.
Right.
I'm not pro 100% Israel, everything they do.
Because you don't have to be, because you're American.
But I will say this, the Palestinians hate Israel because Israel is pro West and pro freedom and pro free speech. And they think it's oppressive and capitalist and needs to be overthrown. And so the college kids look at that and say, "I love it," because they want to join the revolution. They want to overthrow everything. They're also against the West. It's a proxy war. These college students are against what's going on in Israel because they're against Israel because they're against the United States. It's the same kind of neo-Marxist kind of stuff. Like, our system is a system of oppression. We need to overturn it and overthrow it. Like, don't think that they're going to stop. Like, if they swallow up Israel into the sea, you think all these student protesters at Columbia and Yale are just going to be like, "Oh, cool, we can relax now"? No, their next target and their ultimate target is the United States. They want to overthrow our own government. That's the problem with this. I think we need to wake up.
Yeah, I mean, it got to the point where even at Columbia, they had to switch to remote learning on Monday the 22nd to de-escalate the rancor and give us all a chance to consider next steps. This is from Columbia University president, last name Shafiq. But remember those congressional hearings? I think the previous Columbia president stepped down because of that, because she refused to condemn genocide. So it doesn't look like her successor was much more successful in handling this problem.
Was that Columbia or was it NYU? I can't remember. But
it was Columbia. It was a couple of colleges, but Columbia.
Yeah, it was MIT and a few others. But the thing is, you have to remember, okay, so President Biden, one of the reasons he gave for why he ran for president was a bunch of idiots in Charlottesville in cosplay wearing tiki torches and trying to pretend they're like this powerful white nationalist movement. And it was like a bunch of dudes that are just a bunch of dorks. And could they have caused some problems? Sure. But the fact is, the left and Biden wanted to make it seem like this
if the majority of Americans
were doing this, right?
If you want to be real about it, I think a lot of them are feds.
Right. Very well. And that there's a lot to be said that a lot of them are probably feds.
Yeah.
But the point that Biden and the left were trying to say is that Charlottesville was this horrible watershed moment, and it revealed that there were literally hundreds of thousands of Americans on the right that wanted to, you know, this burgeoning white supremacist movement, when it is an absolute joke. There is no political movement of any consequence of any size for a white nationalist, white supremacist movement. It's a fantasy, but the left wants to promote that fantasy so that they can say, "See, the whole GOP is being overtaken by this." Now, if that's the reason Biden was running for president, this whole Charlottesville stuff and making it be, "Oh, this horrible thing." And yet there are Jewish students that are told by the rabbi at Columbia, "You need to flee campus because you're not safe." Like, that is a real danger. That's where the president of the United States needs to step up and say and condemn this. But he won't.
He's not going to, Josh.
He's not going to. Why, Tom?
Well, because it's going to hurt his chances to get reelected. 100%.
That's right.
Yeah. Kind of hilarious. Like, I just think the lies that have been coming from mainstream news and the White House on this are basically insulting at this point, because we're being told simultaneously that somehow white nationalism and Christian nationalism, people that believe their rights come from God, are the greatest threats to the homeland, not the people chanting death to America and we're going to kill people. They're somehow not a threat to America. They wouldn't say that, again, because for political reasons, But it's just, it's such a, it's not even like a sophisticated lie. It's just almost like you have to accept it because we're saying this as the truth and you have no other option. Like there's no, obviously now there's like alternative media that I think are more right. influential than that, but it's not even like a sophisticated regime. It's just in your face lies.
These lies that they put out are extremely lazy, but the reason why they do it is because they have the entire corporate media carrying water for them. And so on the nightly news, on NPR, all these outlets, New York Times, whatever, they're going to put forward these lies and pretend them like it's the truth. And so that's why it's incumbent upon us to go out there and say, no, no, hold on a second. They're not telling you what's really going on at Columbia. Here, there are students that are, you know, parents are picking up their kids because they're afraid for their safety. It's a dangerous situation that's going on there. And the media is ignoring this stuff.
Yeah, 100%. Logan, any comment on college protests?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, a majority of the people who are protesting this, not just on university campuses, but all across the U.S. and further, I think a lot of them don't even understand the history here. I think a lot of people see this as just like the new cool hip thing. It's like the new Black Lives Matter. Like everybody wants to be involved in something.
It does feel similar, yeah.
And I think that it's interesting that if you go and if we were to actually pull some of these people away from this and say, you know, why are you protesting? Why do you feel this way about this situation? A lot of them would say things like, oh, the children dying in Gaza, or they'll talk about stuff like that, which first off, you want to talk about a double standard. Most of those people also think that abortion until 9 months is apparently a cool thing to do. And they're going to vote for that this November. But past that, you know, I think a lot of them just don't understand. It's kind of like, you know, you don't have, when it comes to war, there isn't really playing nice guy. You don't get to swing on someone. And then when they swing back harder, be like, oh, well, you hit me harder than I hit you. It doesn't work like that. That's just not the reality of foreign policy. That's not the reality of war. And well, so I think it's just a lot of people who are just kind of pansies about the whole situation.
Have you
no, seen, I agree with you, but the point is that what these people would say is that the, you know, in Gaza, they can punch Israel, and Israel has no ability to punch back. That's what they claim, which is bananas.
So I don't know if you guys saw this. This was like a big debate over the weekend. So Tucker Carlson went on the Joe Rogan Experience Friday, which I'm a Joe Rogan head. It was electric. I think Tucker is quite the speaker, very entertaining to listen to. But he brought up the point that he doesn't think America should have used the nuclear weapon. The main point he brought up was we kind of became our own god. Humans became their own god when we created the nuclear bomb and used it on people because we now became more powerful than anything else. And people took a lot of – it's very polarizing. People took a lot of different sides on it. Even I believe the CEO of Daily Wire said if you disagree with America using the atomic bomb, you hate America.
That's a stupid statement.
Quite a statement to say. But I have to say – For you guys, like, have you? This is kind of talked about all the time. But what do you think? Like, do you think that you can simultaneously hold? Well, maybe we shouldn't have used it, or maybe I'm a little sad that we used it, but we needed to. Like, what, Josh? You're a history guy. Like, what do you think?
Yeah. So, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I certainly strongly disagree with that statement. Like, you know, Fulton Sheen was somebody who was against us using the atomic bomb, and he said that was, you know, we sort of lost Mary's protection that way. You know, and I agree with him, but like, I remember I talked with this, with my own grandfather who, you know, we've since buried, but he fought in the Pacific theater of the war. And I would ask him about what he thought about the nuclear, you know, war. And it's not just an academic theory on an internet that you get in a debate with somebody, you know, 75 years after the fact. We're talking about his life. And he said he justified the use of it, which I think it's probably not morally justified. Okay. I agree with the church. I don't think it's morally justified. But again, here's the other thing. It's a lot easier to say that 75 years after the fact than 100%. It was at that time. And in fact, Japan, in the engagements that we had with the Empire of Japan, these people were extremely ruthless. And one of the problems with total war is that it has the ability, tyranny has the ability to corrupt even its combatants. So, you know, you start thinking about how evil Hitler is and how evil the Empire of Japan is. And you think to yourself, they have no understanding of treating, you know, prisoners of war fairly. They attack civilian targets all the time. And you think to yourself, we have to crush these people because we cannot allow Hitler to take over all of Europe. We can't allow the Empire of Japan to take over the entire, you know, East Asia. And so then you start thinking about doing the unthinkable. And when you have a weapon like this, you start to think, maybe it's justified. Again, I don't think it was a justified thing, but I'm not gonna throw stones at people who made the decision differently, because the fact is, you saw what you know. I like to let people know about this. As we were preparing for the land invasion of Japan, the War Department put together, I think, about 250,000 Purple Hearts that they anticipated that they'd be needing to give and put it onto the soldiers that were going to be invading. That was, 1944, right? It has now been 80 years since, right? And we still have not exhausted the number of Purple Hearts that we had ready to go for that war. So this is one of my biggest things I always like to tell people about. It's like, it's so much easier with hindsight of history when you're not dealing with that problem. But if you put yourself in someone else's shoes, then it's a lot. Again, Robbie George is a professor at Princeton. He made this point really well. He said to his class, and these are a lot of liberals at Princeton, he said, if you lived in Charleston, South Carolina in 1860, would you be against slavery? And everyone in the entire class, they all raise their hand.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. And he just laughed at him. He said, of the 100 people in this room, one of you would have had your hand raised, actually, if you're being honest. And you would have lost your job. And people would not ever want to talk to you ever again. They would never want to associate with you again. And so it's so easy to say, oh, yeah, if I could jump in a DeLorean and go back in time and go back to 1944, I would have made the moral right decision. Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know what, though? It's a fallen world and we're all sinful. And so I think we need to be a little bit more humble and realize that we might have been making just as many bad decisions ourselves.
Logan.
We try to learn from history, of course.
Thoughts on the bomb? Have you given this a lot of thought?
So, I mean, I'm a little bit younger than Josh, not by much, but a smidge. And I remember when I first learned about it. And I remember reading about it. And like as a child, I actually started crying when I first read about it. And I remember my dad sitting me down because it was hard to understand as a kid. I also skipped middle school. So I was reading stuff that was targeted for an older student. Yeah. And, I remember my dad trying to explain to me like why it had to be done and like, no, it wasn't the best choice, but like, it was a choice that had to be made at the time. And I remember just having such a hard time with that as a kid because, obviously I don't have to explain to you guys why, but that at the same time, I do agree with Josh. It's one of those things where it's easy to sit back in our cushy situation now and look back and say, well, I wouldn't have done that. It's like, well, would you not have? Because what about the lives that were at risk? I mean, I don't remember the exact expected life expectancy of an entry-level military male that jumps out of a plane during World War II. I think it was like 45 seconds.
My gosh.
Josh, it was something insane about like that. Yeah. And so it's like that was the reality. You knew that you were walking into these young men. I mean, everybody had someone they loved that was involved. And so when you're told the life expectancy of this young guy is 45 seconds, it's like, yeah, okay, that's some heavy stuff.
Yeah. I guess my problem with it is when people come out and say like, okay, if you even question the use of it, you're not American or you hate the country somehow. Frustrating because we just had a nuanced—
you have to be able to have the conversation.
We just had a nuanced conversation about it. And what's not helping is if someone takes one clip out of context and says, wow, this guy sucks. And like everyone just attacks them and nails them. It's not bringing anyone closer. And I think it does, back to Tucker's point, if you question things like that, like should we have used it? Should we not have used it? It opens up a can of worms into questioning other things. And other things that he talked about, for example, was like not revealing government documents about the JFK assassination or about 9/11. Like there's a lot of stuff that's still not public about those like really, truly American tragedies to the point where it might be too destabilizing for Americans to know. But I think you can still be a good American and question the government's intent. I mean, anyone that's lived for the last 4 years, I think has maybe experienced a smidge of that. I know I sure have. But yeah, it does make you less American. If anything, I think it makes you more American because we've had the great benefit of being able to debate publicly to actually engage in the decisions our government makes, as opposed to other systems where you would really have no say, like as to whether or not bombs drop somewhere. Like the idea is Congress declares war. So I think it is also one thing that gets lost in a lot of this. It was so funny. I saw this TikTok from a Japanese like gender studies major about how America is so evil and we should have never dropped the bomb and all the bad things that happened. And they owe them reparations was the big argument, which is hilarious. What gets lost is, of course, she was unqualified. And the Japanese at that time, to Josh's point, were truly some of like the most did some of the most ruthless and evil things imaginable to allied prisoners. Like they did medical experiments on them, lobotomies. They would torture them. And notable as well, after the first bomb dropped, they didn't surrender. It took two bombs for them to actually surrender. So yeah, of course, horrible impacts. But there's a really interesting, I think this was like a Malcolm Gladwell podcast series he did on the airline pilot, Curtis LeMay, that was in charge of sending the airplanes and the bomb. And he was just this probably considered crazy, like the risk that he took, the amount of American lives he put at risk of his strategy of flying super low and fast and sacrificing a lot of planes, but to get to hit military targets. That might be a whole nother conversation, but it, worth checking out. I found that really interesting. But I think engaging in it doesn't make you less American. Doesn't make you hate America, first off. It doesn't make you less American. If anything, it makes you more American. So yeah, just interesting all around there. And then I saw that Pints with Aquinas actually talked to an ethicist about it. So if you want to have like a Catholic perspective, go check out that one. I think he just put it up again. Really interesting all around. But I'm glad we have you on today, Logan, because there's a new, and this has been kind of projected, I think, by the Biden administration, but there's a new Title IX proposed rule change. It took, I think, like 1,500 pages to talk about this rule change, which is just insane. So if I could ask, what are the exact changes proposed by the Biden administration to Title IX?
Well, obviously, everyone here at the LoopCast read all 150 pages by ourselves individually when we first woke up this morning.
Well, I think it's 1,500, not 150.
Yeah, 1,500. Yeah, we read those. I mean, ultimately what it gets down to is the Biden administration has made it super clear that they were intending to make changes such as these for quite some time. They've actually been promising it for the past, 3 years. And so this is something we've been expecting, and it's, no shock that it's coming down right before the election. And so that kind of tells you that, we're at the point where we're jockeying for votes, unashamedly jockeying for votes. So basically what it does is it redefines sex or gender as gender identity. And so whatever you say that you are, that is what you have to be accommodated for. And so that goes as far as, that will affect scholarships, academics, housing, locker rooms, bathrooms. And it says that these institutions have to provide reasonable accommodations for your gender identity. And so, the problem is here, it's actually pretty vague, even though there's so many pages, it is still pretty vague about what that actually means. And so it puts institutions, professors, and individuals in a really dangerous situation, because you can now be held liable for harassment if you are violating this new rule, if it goes into place.
Concrete example would be if you don't use the preferred pronouns of another student, right, you could potentially be dragged into a Title IX investigation.
Right. Or it could be something like you identify as a cat and they don't put a litter box in the bathroom in your dorm, and we're laughing about that, but this is happening. I mean, there's a middle school 20 minutes from me right now that has a kid that identifies as a wolf, and the school has to provide reasonable accommodations for this wolf child.
Yeah.
So it sounds crazy, but it's actually happening. So that's the biggest part of it. And I think that's the part that everyone's freaking out about. The other part is they rolled back. So how assaults are announced on campus, or how you have to go through the process of reporting an assault, has changed from back to like more of the Obama time. So where if you're reporting an assault or you're accusing someone, you go to the Title IX director, you give them your statement. The Title IX director then takes that statement and privately goes and meets with the person that's being accused, gets their statement. And then if there are any questions, they go individually to those people. Decided to make this change because they said that it was more comfortable for the accuser in that situation, for the victim to be softer to the time at hand. And so they're actually waving the flag saying this is a big win for assault victims on college campuses. But at the same time, I think it's kind of ironic that they're saying, hey, we're here to protect this whole, the whole reason we're doing this is to protect women or, you know, assault victims, which more often than not is women, but it can be men as well. We're here to protect assault victims, but at the same time, hey, girls, we're going to let guys into your bathroom and we're going to create opportunities for men to assault you. So, hey, but don't worry, when you go to report it, we're going to make it really easy for you.
Right.
So,
hey, clip this in advance. You're going to hear this from the press secretary on this. In the document, they say that this affects extracurricular activities. Mm-hmm. So she's going to get up and say, no, this has nothing to do with sports. It doesn't specifically mention sports. This is about extracurricular activities. Mm-hmm. Guess what? Sports are extracurricular activities. But but KJP is going to get up there and say, no, this doesn't affect sports, even though it 100% does. Someone clip this when it happens. I guarantee it will. That's a Tom guarantee.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Even Riley Gaines, of course, has just become such a big advocate for all of this. And hopefully you guys enjoyed the throwback interview we did on Friday. Vacation was very complicated for me, but I was well rested. She tweets, the Biden administration has officially abolished Title IX as we know it. Now sex equals gender identity. So,
but I think one of the things that, you know, we need to think about is definitions are really, really powerful. And I think sometimes people forget about how powerful a definition is, especially when you're dealing with something like this. And when you remove the definition for what it was originally created to be. So Title IX was created to protect women, to give them equal opportunities in academics and in sports. You know, when you redefine this whole, this has nothing to do with women anymore. You've removed women completely from the equation. And so I think that's just, people need to wake up to how dangerous this is. And I know people listening to the Loopcast, obviously, they're in the know. They know what's happening. They're in the loop, if you will. But your average parent, your average woman should be freaking out because this is, like we've heard people say, a slap in the face to women who have spent generations fighting for equality. And here we are in one fell swoop, sign of a pen, it's taken away.
Yeah. Side note, there was a time where women's basketball, I know we talk a lot about Caitlin Clark these days, women couldn't cross half court. There's only like two players on a team that could cross half court and they were called Rovers. So women have come a long way in basketball. My grandma was a Rover. Shout out to my grandma. She said she was an athlete in her time.
Well, and it is kind of ironic that we're seeing this proposed rule that would decimate Title IX come down the pike just days after, you know, Caitlin Clark broke the record and made a big splash and all of America, you know, really just respecting how great of a career she's had in college. And now she's got drafted by the NBA or WNBA. And you know, that it's a great success story. Like, hey, here's a great athlete. And it's like, well, that's gone, you know, with Title IX. Now you abolish Title IX. And it's like, then if you open up every woman's sports to just being anyone, male or female, well, then it's just going to become two men's sports leagues. That's a joke.
Yeah. And maybe that's a good time. So, if you want to check out more content from the Loopcast, I went a little crazy last week. I did something called Ins and Outs, came straight from my notes app. That's going to be on the YouTube channel. So if you're listening to this on audio, head over to the YouTube channel, the Loopcast. It'll be up there. It's about Caitlin Clark this week, my other ins and outs. I'll be doing those weekly.
That was awesome.
So we benefit from some really talented editors here. So some guy named Tom did it. Crazy, but check it out. Those will be coming weekly. And then I think this is another good time. If you, the absolute best way you can help the show, you can help the Loop, is we have something called the Champions Club. Many of you may have heard of it. Basically, it's a way to support us monthly. We, as you've seen, we don't run ads on this show. We're completely viewer supported. It helps us be very independent, which we enjoy doing it. We're not beholden to sponsors. So if you want to help everything we're doing here, as I mentioned, this isn't just a media organization. We're an organization founded in action. So if you want to help things we're doing on the political side, if you want to help outreach, if you want to help the Loop, if you want to help the Loopcast, the absolute best way you can do that is the Champions Club. None of this is possible without just generous Americans that want to help live out their Catholic faith and see others do it as well. So first off, the only reason we're able to do this is because of current champions. So thank you so much to everyone who supports us in that way or supports us in general, just listens to the show. We appreciate you guys, but the best way, join the Champions Club. The link's going to be in the episode, catholicvote.org/champions. And we appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Well, and there's an upcoming, we have an upcoming event. I don't want to give too many details about it, but you're going to have to be a champion in order to participate. So
okay, that's just
telling you. Make it happen, people.
Okay. So we move on now, and this is probably my favorite. This kind of happened like late last week, early weekend maybe, but Bill Maher. Bill Maher has been kind of on a heater, as the kids say, probably. He did a segment specifically about it started off about the documentary that HBO Max did called Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids on TV. And I think it's been well talked about at this point. There's a lot of pedophiles in Hollywood. I think that's kind of not even fringe anymore. It's just everyone kind of knows about it at this point. And so when he started out, I was like, okay, you know, I know about this. But he made some really interesting points and even swerved into, I think, a lot of things that we cover almost on a weekly basis here at Catholic Vote. So I want to start with the clip. And this is taken from the middle of it, but I think worth watching in its entirety. So if we want to run that clip now.
Tipping at a bar under a sign that says it's not going to lick itself. Do I have to pretend that's cool in order to keep my liberal ID card? Sorry, I can't do that. If you want kids to be more tolerant, why not have handicapped people read them stories? Kids are more likely to encounter disabled people than drag queens in life. Geez, can't we just go back to the good old days when kids were read simple stories with simple morals like, if you're a lonely single man, just make a boy out of wood. I've said it before, wokeness is not an extension of liberalism anymore. It's more often taking something so far that it becomes the opposite. Teaching kids not to hate or judge those who are different, great. Proud we got there, all for that. But at a certain point, inclusion becomes promotion. And contrary to current progressive dogma, children aren't miniature adults wise beyond their years. They're morons. They're gullible morons who'll believe anything and just want to please grown-ups. And they don't have any frame of reference. So they normalize whatever's happening. That's why endlessly talking about gender to six-year-olds isn't just inappropriate. It's what the law would call entrapment, which means enticing people into doing something they wouldn't ordinarily do.
That's it. That's totally it. I mean, if you look at it, like, look at all the different celebrities, like Ben Affleck. He's got a kid who identifies as trans. Jamie Lee Curtis has one that identifies as trans.
They're all over Hollywood, yeah.
And the one lady, I forget, she's on the one show, So Help Me Todd, she's got two kids. Like, what are the statistical odds of this, that you'd have this many people, you know, in Hollywood, the same industry, they all just have kids that just happen to be trans? It's precisely because it's being promoted. And the kids think, oh, this is kind of the new thing. This is the hip thing. This is interesting.
Yeah, the interesting thing about it is it started off, and I've seen many people cover it, the Max documentary is insane. Basically, it was covering Nickelodeon Studios during their run of a lot of very popular shows. One of them being Drake and Josh, for anyone that's familiar with that. And recently, actually, Drake from the show, I forget his real name, he came out and said that he was molested by one of the acting coaches. And he was kind of anonymous throughout the whole lawsuit process before. But he recently has been, I was anonymous. I was molested by an acting coach. That same acting coach is still employed by Nickelodeon after he spent time. I think he spent some time in jail. As soon as he got out, he just gets rehired. And so Bill Maher's like, it's a small world after all. You know, they just keep them around these kids. And it turns out that initiatives aimed at children are going to attract pedophiles. And he was talking about how when DeSantis brought this up, that evil governor of Florida was saying the exact same thing about kids and creepy stuff at Disney that liberals now find intolerable at Nickelodeon. He was dismissed as a hick and a bigot. DeSantis wasn't wrong, but we're so tribal now, the left will overlook child abuse if the guy from the wrong party calls it out. And of course, DeSantis was right about Disney. There was plenty of pedophiles and child offenders working that got busted in different stings and things like that. And it just makes sense. I mean, you see things like schools, why certain people get involved in child programs, like, if you're attracted to kids, then yeah, you're probably going to end up working around them. But to well, the point, that was when he brought up the point, if I may, was, interesting. We have grown men dressing in fetishized sexual outfits that want to read to children. And the left, because that's like the wrong group to say is not okay, they're totally fine with it, wholesale promote it. But if it's DeSantis saying something about it, they have to oppose it. And so then he started going into the whole drag queen story hour thing, which we've covered quite a bit at Catholic Vote. And I think anyone with a brain looks at that and says, yeah, something's off here. It feels like it's more for the adults rather than the kids. So for him to make that point about that feels like the one of the first real like mainstream, hey, maybe we should think about this. Why is everyone okay with this type thing?
Yeah, I mean, and I just think, you know, in our own church and dealing with the clergy sex abuse scandal, like one of the things that so many normal parents were like, wait a minute now, you knew about this guy being a predator and you just moved him to somewhere else, gave him a little counseling and hope he would change. Yep. Like he's a predator. Ironically enough, I've said this before, former governor Jesse Ventura, who's kind of a kook, he made a really good point though about this. He said, predators are intentionally, much to what Bill Maher is saying, they're going to look for areas where they can have access to children. So whether it's churches, schools, amusement parks, they want to be bus drivers. I'm not trying to slander the people who are working in these industries. I'm far from it. But the whole point is they're going to want to try to be in areas where they can find easy targets. And so that's why anyone involved with scouting, you know, schools, yep, all this stuff has to be very careful and like, be, you know, have their eyes open and look out for the wolves 100%. That are going to be coming after our children.
Yeah, I think that this is such a sad topic. For those who didn't watch the documentary, it's heavy, you know, like, so go into it. If you plan to watch it, definitely know what you're getting yourself into because it is really heavy. It's a hard watch, but I think that it's kind of similar to the concept of Sound of Freedom. It's a reality. This is happening and we can't just pretend that it's not because it's uncomfortable. The truth is really uncomfortable. But at the same time, you can't recognize this as an issue and then turn your back and say, oh, but the trans movement, that's different. Like that's not, you know, yeah, like you don't get to say that, you know, oh, we're putting children in compromising situations. These poor child actors, their parents put them in these situations, you know, and then be like, oh, but, you know, it's okay that that 2-year-old was stuffing a dollar into somebody's G-string. Like, that's just like, you don't get to play both sides of this coin. But that also being said, you know, I also think it's interesting. People should look into their state laws and see what their state laws are around, like, the concept of somebody being involved in children's, you know, activities, if you will, or locations. There are states don't actually even have legislation around making sure that there are laws to prevent people from volunteering if they have a history of being a sex offender, as long as they weren't a violent sex offender. Most states even allow them to still volunteer with children. So take a look at your state's laws. If they haven't been updated to something that makes sense, I would contact your state representative and get that changed ASAP.
Yeah,
but it's worth just, you know, again, with that documentary and they show stuff in there. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart. So yeah, they'll show that these guys, these creeps, these pervs, these molesters, these wolves, they got into Hollywood. And I didn't watch 90s shows as a kid because I was already like a teenager.
That was like my generation. Mm-hmm.
But you start watching their clips and seeing the excessively hypersexualized stuff that's pornographic in, you know, understanding, you know, like, well, that should have never been allowed in a kid's show. I'm not saying that they were naked or nude, but like they were simulating stuff.
Innuendo.
That's absolutely inappropriate. Yeah. Innuendos and all that other kind of stuff. But I have to say, look, this is one of the bad things about, in general, kind of cable news. It was sort of, you know, and I'll give a little a knock on this to Reagan. Like, cable news became this vast unregulated thing because it was, it's not broadcast over the airwaves. You get it pumped into your homes. And so this is what we saw in the 90s and kids shows, but also in the early 90s, like MTV, they pretty much were done with music by like 1988. Let me just tell you, I remember when it actually was music television. And then it became where they broadcast Spring Break. And it just became this opportunity for, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16 year old boys at home, you know, to see horrible stuff just right during the daytime, and parents having no idea that they're being broadcast this spring break culture, this kind of horrible stuff. Yeah. And again, it's just, I would say that was a concerted effort by those in Hollywood, like Geffen and others, to promote sexual immorality and to attack the Christian morality of the country. And well, they have largely succeeded.
You made the point about like clips in context, like looking at it back, understanding what was going on is really interesting. That definitely happened with Nickelodeon. And then I actually saw some clips of like press junkets for Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift, who both became famous really young ages. Some of the things being asked to Justin Bieber by newscasters, we're talking like Good Morning America type stuff, middle of the day or like early morning stuff, asking about like, oh, you're probably going to bring home all the girls type stuff. And you're like, when he was like 15. How could we possibly have, and even visibly, he was uncomfortable. He's like, I'm 15. Like this is.
Yeah, exactly.
Or how about when they, go ahead, Josh.
No, go ahead.
Justin Bieber is kind of my thing.
So. Go, Logan, go.
He's a believer.
That was, I, listen, let me tell you one time. let me just tell you one time. So yeah, I mean, somebody asked him, I'll never forget. I saw it when I was a kid. They asked him if he would rather be naked on stage in front of everyone or like something else. And he was like, I have little girl fans. Like, why would I want to be naked on stage? Like, you know, or it was like eat like a bat of worms or something. He's like, I guess I'll eat the worms. But he just like, he actually has come out in adulthood, talked about his issues with substance abuse and getting involved in addiction and like all of his tattoos and just that route that he went down for a long time. He talked about how that all came from things that happened to him in childhood, being put in these situations. And he actually has been very outspoken about trying to make sure that doesn't happen to other young stars that are coming into the realm.
And another thing on all that too, because Justin Bieber has done a great job as an adult, but with specifically with the Drake Bell situation, what was so sad about that in the documentary, they discussed this, his parents were divorced and his father knew something was off about that acting coach. He said, whatever you do to his ex-wife or whatever, because it didn't end well, do not let him around this guy. Don't let him around this guy. Father's intuition. There's something off about him. He's weird. And the mom was like, whatever, whatever. And then what it ended up happening was she allowed this acting coach to stay in her home with Drake Bell. Mm-hmm. And he knew, the dad knew. And that it kind of goes back too, because they also discuss, Bill Maher discussed in the video about how there's this new thing called like sharenting, where parents are basically pimping out their kids to social media for views and contracts and stuff like that. Like,
just look it up. Don't, well, let's not go into detail.
It's not going to go into detail, but like parents are not in a, basically they're just using their kids for views on social media, YouTube, et cetera. And I think the hardest thing, the best defense about this is like solid families. I think so many problems come from when families get broken up, divorced, or things come in, incentives come in, and that breaks people apart and it causes difficult decisions. I just think the best thing that you can possibly do is like get married, raise a really solid family, work together as a team, think about different opportunities that come in front of you as to how does this impact our family? Is it positive or negative? Is it what's best for the children? And I think when you get that split in there, that's where a lot of kind of nasty things like that can kind of get into play, you know?
So I think that a theme that we've kind of heard throughout the news on this cycle is the idea that we're creating an environment that protects predators, and we should be super, super, super aware of that and concerned, because this is really scary. I don't think people realize what the numbers really are of kids that are abused or women that go through assault or even men that go through assault. And these are reported. So we're not even talking about the things that never even come to the light of day. And so we're talking one out of six boys, one out of four girls go through some sort of abuse in childhood. And then the adulthood numbers are even scarier. And again, this is just reported. And so when we, you know, we talk about all this stuff, it's like talking points almost, because we talk about it so much, but it's not talking points. I mean, these things are really happening and we should be very afraid of them. And like, no, it's not just happening because it's an election cycle and people want to talk about this stuff. The world is becoming a scarier place for our children and our children's children, and we have to do something to stop it. And that's through prayer and activism in the political world. And we shouldn't stop being worried about this when November comes around.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, you know, this large porn lust industry is only adding fuel to that fire. And then we have just, you know, even there's pornography, which is at its worst, but then there's like pornified regular culture, like what we saw in these kids shows and all this other stuff, that's also fueling that basically says, you know, satiate your lust, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And like you say, like, and sometimes those who get victimized, I feel for it, but they also try to implicate others. So like, you know, the person who was asking that question of Justin Bieber, that might have been someone who themselves was kind of feeling guilt-ridden and they want to try to make it seem normal. And so they try to say, see, that's fine. That's normal. And, you know, you just wish there'd be more people. I remember the baseball star, Bryce Harper, you know, he was playing, he was 19 years old. He enters in major leagues and he's in Toronto and he plays against the Blue Jays. And some reporter's like, hey, did you go get yourself some drink? Cause you can drink, you know, and he just goes, that's a clown question, bro. It was just such a great moment. It's like, we got to push back at these people.
Yeah.
Like sometimes reporters, there's like no discretion, you know, they love every, you know, they love everything that all the, you know, sizzly details and
clown.
They know it sells. They know it gets clicks. They know it gets sells. So,
but yeah, Vice. I think this is a spiritual problem that we're encountering. This isn't
political at all. It's mostly spiritual.
This is 100% a spiritual problem, and vice begets more vice. And the more that we encourage vice in our society, the more people are going to be hooked. It's like when you were saying, if you do something evil, it's not even that it just you've done evil to someone else is the worst part of it. That is bad, of course, is a part of it. But what's almost worse is that you become evil yourself. Like doing evil corrupts yourself. It corrupts the host of the evil. And so we have people out there. And that's the problem when you say like, oh, you got to do this to satiate it. You know, that's like the argument for pornography or even with like sex offenders. Like what if we just do VR or something? We get rid of it. It's like you don't understand how vice works, how evil works. Once you engage in vice and evil, you become more vicious and evil. It takes you over. That's what sin does. That's what Satan does. So we need to step, we need to push back against vice, evil, and understand this is a spiritual problem that will corrupt the host, that will corrupt your soul, therefore corrupting larger society. But this is a spiritual problem. This is not some political issue.
Yeah. And I do think that, you know, the fastest way to change culture is through politics, but at the end of the day, it's a Band-Aid on a bullet wound that we need to address at a deeper. And like you said earlier, talking about the family, that's where we need to address it and just celebrate family again, celebrate families who stay together instead of romanticizing divorce and starting anew, which I think we're coming into a society where, you know, it's romanticized for you to be able to get a divorce. Like, don't worry. You don't if things are tough, it's okay. You can start again. It's never too late to start again. And it's like, well, you're breaking up a family and it's much deeper and much more dangerous. I do want to make a point, you know, the American Medical Association has been trying for gosh, almost 20 years now to redefine pedophilia as a sexual preference.
Minor attracted persons.
MAPs. Yeah, instead of, yeah, exactly. So, you know, if that were to take place, I think you should also be aware, people should pay attention. What does that do to, you know, with these abortion amendments going on in these states? That actually will end up triggering a lot of these states to change consent laws with children and predators. And so, you know, this is going to be a domino effect of a lot of evil. And, you know, the devil's clapping his hands right now the farther we go along.
Yeah. Amen.
Speaking well, we all need to repent. We need confession.
Yep.
Back to what we started on.
Running into the Twilight Zone now. Josh, you are up first.
Well, I don't know if it's a Twilight Zone per se, but I just, you know, there's news coming out here. Biden is in major trouble. I'll get to that one in a second. Actually, first I want to get to this. Biden is in trouble with Catholic voters. A new survey by Pew Research found that just 35% of Catholics held a favorable view of Biden, while 64% of Catholics had an unfavorable view of Biden. So that is major news. You know, like the trend line over the last 15, 20 years has been that amongst Catholics, they're trending more Republican. I think it's precisely because, you know, the Democratic Party of old is no longer there. I mean, Bill Clinton signed the Defense of Marriage Act. He tried to say that he wanted abortion to be rare, which we did. I never believed him, but others might have believed it. And, you know, back then, so the that's the old Democratic Party, though.
Wait, I mean, Josh.
There's Joe Biden right there. He's going to Florida sometime this week to make a major speech on abortion. And I think Catholics are understanding, like, here's a guy who's not doing anything to protect our churches from violence. He's a 100% full-throated in favor of abortion from beginning to end. And, you know, Catholics are like, this is not the guy for me. So,
sorry,
that's
Josh.
Good.
Josh, are you suggesting that the president that spies on Catholics, uses the DOJ to persecute them, allows violence on Catholic churches, and is making the central part of his campaign something that's actually against church teaching, that would make him unpopular with said Catholics?
Yeah, and part of it is, thankfully, but part of it is that people sometimes have long-standing views. I mean, you know, my grandfather is a good Catholic, and he voted for the man. He wasn't like these Catholics who just said, "I'm going to vote for a Democrat no matter what." But there, you know, the Greatest Generation. There's a lot of those people in the Greatest Generation, and thank God we talked about earlier in this hour about how they fought against tyranny, and that's great. But the fact is, in their hearts, they dreamt of candidates like FDR and Truman, and yet they voted for people like Obama and Biden, who are so far to the left. But those voters are being replaced by voters, I think, you know, are starting to realize, wait a minute, this isn't the Democratic Party of old anymore. This Democratic Party is hyper woke, super pro-abortion, and it's not for me. But all that said, I do want, now you can throw up the other graphic. There's a little friendly reminder here, though, when you start looking at all the different religions. Atheists are the most politically engaged group in the country.
Well, politics are their religion, Josh.
That's absolutely true. And so therefore, it's not too much of a surprise. But then again, like 50% of atheists made a political donation in 2020. They engage in about twice as many political activities as evangelicals. So, you know, they are fighting for what they believe. The question we have to ask ourselves, are we doing the same?
Yeah, worth chewing on. Logan, your twat zone.
Mine is pretty short. So there was this video that went viral about this teacher who, he's a history professor, and somebody asked him a question, basically, what do you call someone who hates white people because they're white? And the person was obviously trying to get him to say
a racist.
He said a justifiable human being, and then goes on. He goes
come on.
On.
Come on.
I have the video linked, but it's a minute long video. But
you wrote, so if someone that isn't white hates on a white person based on their skin color, what do you call that? You're not going to like my answer. I call it justifiable. White bodied people have conquered and colonized almost this entire planet. As a history teacher, I teach my students about the scramble for Africa, in which all of these European countries came together to decide which parts of Africa they were going to.
Yeah.
So we don't need to play the whole video, but it goes on. He goes through all these things about why white people are bad. And then, you know, he does touch on the war on drugs, which I think is funny because Kamala, but whatever, we're not going to get into that.
Dude, I could have made that my Twilight Zone.
I'm not going to go there. But what I will say is that he ends it by saying, you know, it's justified to be angry at white people for being white. And I think it's really funny because, I mean, it's not funny, but it's funny because people want to know why we have students rioting at, you know, our universities and hating America. And I mean, we're telling them to hate themselves. You have these white kids who are being told that because they're white, they're inherently bad and they should feel guilty for things that have happened generations ago. Like, it's absolutely absurd. And let's like not forget, you know, I saw a comment on there. It was like, what about Jewish people? It's like, well, that's different. You know?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, I think the point that a lot of people, you know, like in the, you know, perhaps in schools in the 1940s and 50s, we only talked about the good things America did and we ignored all of our faults. Sure, maybe. But why do we have to go to the opposite extreme and say only the bad things America ever did and never talk about the good things? Like, why wouldn't history say, this is a great country? We landed on the moon. We liberated, you know, the continent of Europe. We won in Japan. Like, I mean, like, why are we only talking about our bad stuff? I don't get it.
There's a great clip. I saw this comedian, Bobby Lee and Andrew Santino. It was on their podcast. And he's like, yeah, like white people, you know, they're just like, they're colonizers and this and that. Bobby Lee's Korean. He's like, Korean people never had slaves. And then they had their producer look up, like, did Korea ever have slaves? And the first thing they found was, like, Korea had the largest, longest unbroken chain of slavery of any civilization in history. I think it was, like, 1,500 years of combined slavery.
Ruh-roh.
That is insane. And they're, like, laughing. They're, like, how did we not know this? Like, how were we only told that, like, white people in America are the big slave people. Like, oh my gosh, Korea was actually the worst. It's like, yeah, we have such a limited understanding.
Because when you're number one, everyone goes for the guy at the top. I get it. But like, it'd be nice if our own country wouldn't, you know, take a dump on ourselves. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be sick. Okay, so I've been waiting for this one, man. This was – I saw this and I just – oh, okay. I don't even know if I – do I even set this one up? I'm going to set this one up probably for the audio listeners. So there's a Utah middle school that staged a walkout, okay? And you think about what people are staging walkouts these days, probably like over men and female spaces. Some walkouts are about gun violence maybe. This one was about the furry community. So several middle schoolers said that the reason they did their walkout, this was in Utah, because people dressing up in furry costumes, that is an animal costume, were biting people's ankles during class. Multiple of my friends have been bitten by the furries and scratched, and the school won't do anything about it when we tell them. And then another one was, they're barking at us in class. Then they try to bite people's ankles. We need them out of our environment. Save it for the forest, another protester said.
Time to spay and neuter.
So, yeah. So, again, furries are people that dress up as animals in big animal costumes. And a local news station wanted to do some journalism on this one. So they did an interview. And you just got, I mean, play the clip. You just got to see the clip.
Of the furry fandom. Though they've been a furry for over a decade, they have their own opinions.
It's crazy that it's escalated to this point where these kids are being so distracting to their peers that their peers want to stage a walkout. So to have, you know, the next generation kind of muddy our name and not represent it very well, it is kind of disappointing.
Strudel believes there should be some limits.
Continue doing things you like, continue dressing up, continue making art, but maybe let's keep it outside of school hours.
As for the school, Sorensen says they have one main goal.
We want every student to feel safe when they come to school, and we want students to get along. In fact, we want adults to get along.
Okay, so the district says they... Wow.
Okay,
First of all, I could never wear a suit like that because I would start a fire. I'd be so hot.
Josh, though, we got it for the audio listeners. The reason that the mic was a little bit muffled was because the person they were interviewing was wearing a full animal costume and they were interviewing him.
They went
by they, them pronouns. So they were kept referring to I think it was a girl.
See,
I don't know. They were under the costume. You can't tell.
And then she needs to bring back bullying.
If I could, final point, she used the term muddying the reputation of people, which is just an awesome term to use when you're dressed as a dog.
Her name was Strudel.
But if this is like, guys, we do this live show every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. If that's not a reason to pop over to YouTube to see this, truly, like, this looked like it was a fake. It looked like a parody news program, mm-hmm. which I've seen those and they're hilarious. This was a real local news report in Utah of someone interviewing someone in a full dog costume that had been accused of their community, accused of biting people during class and barking at them in class. And the people who walked out, all they did was like, hey, man, like maybe you should enforce the school dress code a little bit more because people are dressed up in animal costumes and biting people. And that school administrator, when faced by the news, said, hey, man, we just want everyone to be safe. Like they weren't even doing anything about like what?
So
what could we possibly be doing at this point? I guess that's the answer. We need to get them cones or something.
I'm telling you, I told you, I mentioned this earlier. I didn't even know this is going to be your Twilight Zone. There's a kid in my town that says he's a wolf. And like, I thought it was a joke, but I know one of the school board members and she was like, no, like we had a kid that was supposed to room with him or her, them, they, whatever it on this school trip. And the kid had to get moved rooms because the guy was licking the other kid.
Oh my, no, no.
12 years old. Yeah. What?
Dude. And so I'm saying you got to bring back bullying a little bit, maybe. I mean,
The only reason why this is able to happen, and so I think a comedian did this, and I wish I could credit them. I can remember right now. The internet has just connected all of these like people that used to like adults that used to dress up in diapers because it got them off somehow. They just did that in their basement and they didn't tell anyone about it because you couldn't.
Right.
And now the internet's around, they organize. There's a group of adult diaper wearers in their basements now talking to each other, bragging about their adult diaper wearing. What could possibly teach a kid other than the internet connecting them to this other like furry communities mm-hmm. that they're a wolf and that they should lick people?
Well, and there's an entire community of, I learned this recently, online adult entertainment, if you will, that circles around furries. That is like actually how it started. Apparently that's how it started, is it started off as a fetish in that area. And then it kind of became this thing that people did in public. I was getting ice cream this weekend and there was a woman wearing a raccoon tail. And I was like, is that a tail? Like as she walked.
Did you talk to her? You talked to her?
No, I said it out loud to the people I was with. And then she turned back and did this.
Oh my gosh, Logan, what are we doing?
Actually, what we're doing is Catholic Vote is going to buy some acreage out in North Dakota. And we're going to start a commune. So if you guys want to join, there won't be Wi-Fi except in the locked building that only the adults have the passcode to.
Yeah, that only the Loopcast has access to. We'll come out and we'll do the Loopcast. Guys, this is not good. Whatever that is, not good. I hope they change it. I remember like back when I was in, because I went to a public middle school, like the dress code, what people were focusing on was like midriff or like tank tops. They're like, and reasonably so, they were like, hey, don't wear that. Like an administrator would be like, all right, you got to wear this shirt over it or whatever. And people were like, oh my gosh, they're so oppressive. And now we have straight up biting and licking going on in schools and they're doing nothing about it. And the students have to walk out over this. Like, it's crazy how much this has changed in like 10 years. I didn't go to middle school that long ago. It's probably like 12 years, 13 years. Gosh. All right. We got to wrap. I need to go get some air.
Let's do some closing prayers after all that.
Yeah. Exorcist prayers. If you want to help out the Loopcast, leave us a review, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Those help us out a ton. If you want to email me, loopcast@catholicvote.org, please stop sending an email saying Josh needs to be back in the program. Sometimes Josh needs to take a break and he needs to go do things for society. So Josh, chill out with the emails, okay? Like, you don't have to email me to let me know. I missed you, too. I wanted to.
Hey, I got fans, Tom. Just understand it, okay?
The force is strong. You got a little fan base, for sure. So if you want to help us out financially, if you want to support the show, Champions Club, as I mentioned before, you can find that at loopcast.org. So that does it for this show. We'll see you guys on Wednesday. St. Thomas More, St. Fidelis, Our Lady of Guadalupe, pray for us. We're praying for you guys. And we hope you guys have a great Monday. Peace.